Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, the HEALS Act, way short of what we need to get through this pandemic. And here in Pennsylvania, what I'm seeing, I don't think it's going to be all that as helpful as we need. It's really insufficient numbers as of this moment. But again, I'm not really surprised by that. The question is in this moment, in this moment of chaos, of pandemic, when interest rates are extraordinarily low, will we take the opportunity to really move our country forward? Or is this just an opportunity for big business to line their pockets, as we've seen, and, well, poor people to get a lot poorer? Here to share some thoughts on where we go as a nation, I've asked our good friend Stephen Herzenberg to come talk with us. Steve is the executive director of the Keystone Research Center, keystoneresearch.org, their website. Steve, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be here, Rick.
So, you know, I'm looking at this, and I know you guys have a statement out today about the response that being, you know, just completely inadequate. Where do you see us going over the next couple of days with the negotiations?
I think the response from the Republicans in the Senate was completely inadequate. I think we need something better, and I think the Democrats in the U.S. House, led by Nancy Pelosi, are winning the communications war around that. The fact that so many millions of families were receiving those $600 checks that, in addition to unemployment insurance, that allowed them to pay the rent and to put food on the table and to not have to go back to work, so that they could help stem the spread of this virus, which benefits everybody. I think the need to continue support at that kind of scale is so blindingly obvious. As the virus spreads more and more, kind of double the rate nationally recently, as after we thought we'd bent the curve down. So I think we'll end up with something better than the HEALS Act. Probably not enough, but something that puts more money in the pockets of families that need it, and mitigates the damage of this COVID crash.
Yeah, but for me, you know, I look at this, and I don't want to get into the whole HEALS Act and what it is and how bad it is, because it is bad. But, you know, for me, we're at this moment where, with a little visionary leadership, with a little, you know, down road looking, we could really change the direction of this country, and we could, you know, possibly, you know, reignite a new deal to where we reimagine what places like Appalachia looks like. And I know you guys have a new campaign going on of reimagining what Appalachia could look like and the investments that could be made in high poverty areas. To me, this could be one of those moments.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. Last week, we unveiled the Reimagine Appalachia campaign, which is kind of anchored in the Ohio Valley, which is southwestern Pennsylvania, southeastern Ohio, West Virginia, and eastern Kentucky. This is a part of Appalachia that's, in many cases, very poor. It's been, for a century or more, been doing the hard work to mine the coal and extract the energy that fuels the rest of the country, but somehow still ends up poorer in many parts of that region than the rest of the country. And the parts of that region that did better, such as southwestern Pennsylvania and around Pittsburgh, have not done well in the last 40 years. There's been a lot of downward mobility among working people. So it's an area where people are angry. The economy's not been working for them for a long time, despite the fact that people work hard, care about their families and the communities, want to make a contribution. And frankly, you know, some of the despair and opioids in that part of the country reflects the fact that people are not being given an opportunity to contribute. So we think there really is an opportunity now. We have a massive need to kickstart the economy and to create jobs, but we also have, there's a great deal of carbon emissions that are produced across the country, but including from that region. And so there's a lot of work to be done transitioning our economy, repairing the damage from the last century, whether it's abandoned mine lands or uncapped oil and gas wells. And so we've laid out a detailed agenda, you know, the federal investments that will stimulate the economy and bring us out of the COVID crash are also investments that can reduce carbon emissions. We call it a New Deal that works for us because, you know, the Green New Deal debate has been led by folks on the East and the West Coast. In our agenda, it's got to start with economic opportunity. I mean, you've had four decades where so much of the gains of growth, virtually all of the gains of growth, have gone to the top 1%, the top 10%, and especially the top 1%. So, yeah, we laid out an agenda. It capitalizes on the skills and ingenuity and work ethic of people in that region. We really could use this crisis, this wake-up call, including the wake-up call around racial injustice in this country, and we could craft a new deal that works for everybody, white, black, brown. And so that's what we laid out. And it's ultimately, as you know, Rick, it's not that complicated. I mean, you need to make a bunch of investments in things like sustainable transportation, electric vehicle infrastructure and rail, things like modernizing the grid. We need universal broadband. We need sustainable manufacturing, not the end of manufacturing, but a renewal of manufacturing, but just cleaner manufacturing. And then we've got, again, a whole lot of work that needs to be done, planting trees, shifting over to agricultural practices that absorb carbon, cleaning up those mine lands. Really, if we take the decisive actions that we need to, and a lot of our agenda is sort of informed by the New Deal. So let's take some of that work that needs to be done back in the 1930s, the Civilian Conservation Corps, over a decade, employed 3 million people planting trees and building infrastructure in parks and forests, leaving a legacy that still today people benefit from. And that's the equivalent of 10 million jobs in today's workforce. That's work that's almost all outdoors. It can be done honoring social distancing. It's like, let's get going. And the other thing that part of our agenda does is it really does give a lot of folks, I mean, the share of men in the country, but more so in that region that aren't employed, has grown alarmingly over a period of decades since the 1970s. So it would be work that's really honorable work, where people know that they're making a contribution to the greater good. So bottom line is, we absolutely think there is a new deal that works for us, that could be crafted, that would create the jobs people need, that would demonstrate that there's not a trade-off between people's health and the environment and good middle-class jobs, you know, and give people that chance to contribute again. So it's a matter of winning the policies we need and persuading in this critical election year, from the top of the ticket down to the congressional races and the state-level races, you know, we need creative people who are willing to support the decisive government action that gets us a massive twofer in terms of, or threefer in terms of, the environment, people's health, the quality of people's jobs, and the strength of our community.
Now, ultimately, as you pointed out, it's public investment. And so how do you get past the fact that, and I look at West Virginia, that the coal industry is so powerful there, even though, you know, you're talking about, you know, such a few number of jobs, but the, you know, the industry is really extremely powerful policy-wise. You know, how do you get people to move away from the reality that coal is not coming back, and that we have to move to this new frontier, and we have to clean up all of the mess that mountaintop removal and things like that have done over the years.
So it's not easy, but you have to make the case, and particularly when it comes to workers and families and communities that have seen the loss of middle class jobs over decades, and seen that the jobs that they can get are like low wage service jobs. You got to make the fact that this public investment will create more good union, middle class, blue collar, industrial jobs. You got to make it real for people. So, and the good news is that there are, for example, solar is growing. The good news is we saw a presentation from a developer based in Pittsburgh that's got like 20 different small-scale hydroelectric projects that sort of collectively $500 million of investment in Ohio, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania. So the second part, we brought out an overall agenda, but the second major release we'll do in the latter part of August is actually an economic study of the jobs that will be created in each of these four states and the four states together if you make those public investments that you need to drive down carbon emissions. And we're very excited to produce those numbers, and I think those numbers will make the case that actually the path we're talking about is going to have a lot more jobs. It's not simply going to replace coal jobs or replace fracking jobs that have now disappeared, or create more jobs than the petrochemical facilities that have been a focus of so much discussion out west. It's going to create millions more jobs. But so, we got to make the argument. We got to make it real by pointing to particular living examples. And but that is the reality. The future. Betting on fossil fuels and petrochemical at a time when, plastic bans are spreading across the world and we have a oceanic plastics crisis, that's betting on the past. We have much more opportunity if we get on the train early in terms of aggressively addressing climate change.
Right.
That's gonna restore the middle class.
And early would have been like 20 years ago. We're kind of late on this.
Yeah.
But right, it's one of those better late than never kind of things in my mind.
Absolutely. And again, it's like if we can get through, and it's still hard, but if we could get through the skepticism, I mean, the hardest part of making this transition is the early part, and where people can't yet see the jobs, and they don't buy the argument that if you really tie, our plan would tie to the public investment real rights to organize so they can become good union jobs, including the solar and wind construction can be good union jobs. But so early on, it's hard. But if you can get out of the gate and people begin to see it coming to life, then what you can imagine a situation where really everybody says, okay, we can make this work. Let's all row together. And again, that's what we want to we want to get to that. And the next 12 months are pivotal to not waiting another 4 years that we can't afford.
I love the optimism, and I love the fact that there's a chance. Maybe we try. And I hope people will check out the website, reimagineappalachia.org. We'll get the links out on social media so folks can take a look at it. Last question I've got for you, because, in this day and age, we have to get corporate buy-in. How do you see corporate America, coming around to this? They're still trying to prop up fossil fuels. I got to imagine that's going to be your biggest anti-group, no?
Yeah, I mean, there are splits in corporate America. So I was having a conversation with a woman in Pittsburgh yesterday who runs something called the PA Solar Center. She's got 100 different businesses in that industry that are you know, obviously supportive of the policies that will spread renewable energy. You know, you've got a bunch of fossil fuel companies that are hedging their bets, you know, investing in non-fossil fuel stuff as well as still fighting like hell to make sure that they don't have to write off massive losses because of their fossil fuel assets. So the economics right now of fossil fuels, including like coal and even gas electricity, is pretty dismal. And so it's actually market forces that in the end are driving additional nails into some of the limited number of jobs that are left in the fossil fuel economy. Right. So in the end, I think businesses will fight and the companies that, you know, the executives will loot the fossil fuel companies, as we know, on their way out before they go bankrupt.
Yes, they will.
But in the end, the business community will come around because they're not going to be able to make money. They'll extract the last drop of blood they can from public subsidies at every level. But at the end of the day, they're dinosaurs. And so what our region needs to do, what our policymakers need to do, is recognize where the economy is going and shape that economy so that it is good jobs, it's union jobs, and so that we stop polluting our communities and fouling our air, and, you know, more so low-income communities than others. And again, we definitely have a chance to turn a corner here and to create a much brighter future.
There you go. ReimagineAppalachia.org, the website. We'll get links out. Yeah. You can take a look at all their information there. And when you release the next report, we'd love to have you come back and share what
perfect.
That's going to look like, because I'm excited to hear about you know, what the future is going to look like for employment and how we build a prosperous working class once again. Steve, I appreciate the time.
Sure. And one more quick promo. When you go to reimagineAppalachia.org, there's a pop-up video. It's 3 minutes. It's a campaign video, but it's a wonderful video. The narrator is a woman who runs the Ohio think tank, who comes from Kentucky, and it's just a beautiful video, and it really communicates how we can honor the values of the people of Appalachia and reimagine it and create that better future. So 3 minutes of your time. It's not wonkery. It's worth it. Go to the website.
We'll make sure we get that as well. Steve, I appreciate the time, man.
All right. Cool. Bye.
Good stuff. Our good friend, Dr. Steven Herzenberg, Executive Director of the Keystone Research Center. Their website, keystoneresearch.org. But go to reimagineappalachia.org and check out their work right there. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.